Thank you. Tonight, I've asked Mike to share on this step.
Thanks, Mike. Hey, everybody. My name's Mike. I'm an alcoholic. Grateful member of this group and grateful to be sober tonight. And when I say I'm grateful to be sober, I mean that. And I'm not just talking about physically sober, meaning not drinking alcohol. I'm talking about emotional sobriety, which is at peace with myself, within myself, and with the people around me in my life. And that's as a direct result of a psychic change that the doctor talks about here in this chapter, which really, to me, is just another term for spiritual awakening or spiritual experience. If you read the spiritual experience in the back, it kind of describes it as a personality change sufficient to overcome alcoholism, a shift in attitude and outlook. And that's a psychic change. You know, so to me, they're both the same thing. I could say I've had a psychic change as the result of these steps, and that would be an accurate statement. That didn't come from reading this chapter or knowing that I was powerless over alcohol. I know today that knowing I'm powerless over alcohol will not keep me sober. A psychic change will keep me sober. And I think that's why the doctor talks about it. To me, that's the most important part of this chapter for me today, is the mentioning of that psychic change. And then he gives two examples of men at the end who he met that had had a psychic change. He didn't even recognize the first guy, who was a former patient. Obviously, he had had a psychic change. He couldn't even recognize him, you know. He totally behaved. He was full of confidence and contentment. He didn't resemble in any way the man he had known when he was a patient under his care. So those are real-life examples of psychic changes. I have not only experienced my own psychic change, but I've seen many psychic changes over the years firsthand with guys I've been fortunate enough to help through these steps. And I've seen them become transformed. I've seen their thinking change and their behavior change, and then their whole lives changed, all for the better. But I also know from experience that I have to maintain the psychic change on a daily basis. That requires constant effort on my part for me. It's a grease slide back for me if I slack off on this stuff, and I have done that. I know that from experience. So I stay sober a day at a time by maintaining my psychic change, by maintaining my spiritual condition. If I'm starting to get angry at people around me and start getting afraid and allowing that shit to start to run my life for an extended period of time, I mean, this stuff always comes up for me regularly. But if I were to not handle it and allow it to fester and accumulate and grow, you know, I know it's only going to be a matter of time before I pick up a drink. One, because this book tells me that in another chapter, that the insanity of alcohol returns, you know, when I harbor negative feelings and anger. I shut myself off from the sunlight of spirit. What does that mean? It means I go into a friggin' black hole of negativity. And, you know, if I am in a place like that for long enough, I'm going to need relief and I'm going to seek relief, you know. And before I had done these steps, the only relief I knew was alcohol. You know, but I'm fucked because he explains that I'm not like other people, you know. He explains these different categories of alcoholics, different types of alcoholics, but he says they all have one thing in common. They can't start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. Now, I believe there's a physical component to this. that the doctor's theory. I happen to believe that, as well as a mental compulsion. But I don't know that for a fact, but I believe it. But what I do know for a fact is when I put alcohol in me, I develop a phenomenon, the craving. That is a fact. I know that. And that is what is important for me to know. And just as important is I know the solution for that is a psychic change, which I get from, I originally got from going through these steps, and then I keep by regularly practicing these steps, as I said. So it is about staying sober, but for me, my primary focus on a daily basis is staying okay emotionally, like trying to maintain my inner peace and the peace with the you know, other people around me as best as I can on a daily basis. Sometimes it's not as easy as other times, but you know, the more I've practiced this, the better I've got at it, just from continuing to practice it. So, you know, my first drink was innocent enough. It was way back, I think in 1964, I think around there somewhere. I still remember it. It was a can of Schlitz. And a friend of mine had been able to acquire a six-pack of Schlitz, 12-ounce cans, and a pack of Pall Mall cigarette, filterless cigarettes. And I think we're about 14. We went down to the basement of my dad's house, and we opened the back door to the backyard, let some air in, and we started smoking and started drinking. And the third beer we shotgunned, which I didn't even know how to do that. My friend had heard about it somehow, and so we both tried it. We were both successful in shotgunning the third beer. And these cans back then did not have the pop tops they have today, and they didn't have the pull tabs either, which preceded the tops they have today. They literally needed a can opener to open them. So if you put one hole in the top, or if you put one hole in the bottom and stuck that up to your mouth and then put a hole in the top, the air would force the contents down your throat. And I didn't throw up. And neither did my friend. And that was not a good sign. I didn't know it at the time, but I don't remember not liking the taste of beer. To the best of my memory, I liked it. And I didn't get sick. And so I was off, you know. And I didn't drink all the time in the early years through high school. You know, I basically drank on weekends here and there, but you know, it gradually got its tentacles around me. You know, it took a little time. I think I went in the military in the early 70s, and my drinking really took off in there. That's where I became a daily drinker. It was just everybody drank every day. And then when I get out, you know, I grew up in a predominantly Irish working class neighborhood with, you know, it's like an American version of Ireland, the bar rooms on every friggin' corner, package stores everywhere, and everybody drank. So I just fell right into that lifestyle, and, you know, I started drinking more, and eventually, you know, long story short, my drinking increased. So eventually it got to be daily drinking, and my behavior and my morals declined as my drinking progressed. And I eventually, you know, I had a lot of friends at the time. I grew up in baby boomer generation in the city. There were tons of, it was a huge tribe, you know, there were tons of people, kids where I grew up and guys all my age, you know. But as time went on, the numbers got smaller as people who weren't alcoholic got married and started families and got careers or whatnot. And I ended up with about six or eight guys who drank like I did. We were just losers. We didn't have girlfriends. You know, we didn't have You know, we weren't married, and we lived to drink. We lived to fucking drink, you know. And I always wanted to be like when I had that first Schlitz, and I just could never recapture that. And, you know, I was in my late 30s, and I still wanted to be like it was when I was in my my 20s, you know. And eventually, I was alone through my own behavior and a train of circumstances. I ended up separating from even those few guys that were left, and I was all alone. I was drinking by myself. I moved to a different part of Boston, and I moved into a shithole of an apartment, and I was, and that's how I ended up. The last at least five years of my drinking was just making it to work when I could, missing a lot of work because of drinking. When I wasn't working, I was drinking all the time, except when I would pass out. I would go home, I would hit the packy as soon as I got out of work, I'd drink all the way home, I'd drink as soon as I hit the packy again when I got home, I'd drink myself into oblivion. And somehow, I had a moment of clarity, like, wow, I'm 40 years old and things are not getting better, you know. And I know what loneliness and despair and hopelessness feels like, you know. I didn't know what the fuck to do, you know, and I don't ever want to be in that place again. My life today does not resemble that person and that life in any way, shape, or form because of Alcoholics Anonymous and this and the program of AA, program and the fellowship. So I got into AA and I got 12-stepped right into the Big Book Step Study early when I was a few months sober, and I was introduced to this chapter. And you know, I was, in so many words, I was basically told I'm screwed. You have this addiction to alcohol, and then I would learn further on that the mental part of this, that is why I have to continue to work these steps and continue to come to meetings, because of the mental part. You know, if I could just stay sober on my own, I wouldn't need AA, you know. But that's not the case, you know. So I was told that I was a candidate for these steps, and it turned out to be the truth. I was a candidate for these steps, and I got a psychic change. It completely changed me. I was full of rage in sobriety, full of fear. In sobriety, I could not get along with people in my life. I couldn't get along with people in work. I couldn't get along with my bosses. I couldn't get along with my parents. I couldn't get along with my siblings. I couldn't get along with people, you know. I just had a hard time. And I learned that was alcoholism. Alcoholism doesn't come in a bottle. It comes between the ears of an alcoholic. And the 12 steps are not the recovery program for alcohol. They're the recovery program for alcoholism, the mental illness of alcoholism. You know, when I'm fucking arguing with people who aren't physically present, that is not an example of someone who is of sound mind, you know? That's not friggin' normal. It's just not fucking normal. I like what Scotty says, that his first sponsor said to him, "Have you ever killed anybody?" And he said, like, fuck, what the fuck kind of question is that? "No, I've never killed anybody." He said, "Have you ever thought of killing someone?" "Well, yeah, I have." He said, "That's not fucking normal." You know? I have two brothers, one alcoholics. They do not think about fucking murdering people. You know? So, you know, I need that shit to be taken care of, or I'm in danger of picking up a drink again, you know. And this is my medicine, is this meeting, people on this path, and these steps. Thanks.
All right, I'm going to reread this.